we've now got Mr. Glass, who again you've hopefully read his evidence. I think he's going to touch on a couple of key points.
We have read your evidence in detail, so thank you for that. It's very helpful, but if you want to highlight key points, we believe that's okay.
Certainly, thank you for the opportunity to present today. I guess with Dairy Holdings, as you've seen outlined in the evidence, we've got operations throughout the South Island, and these processes are becoming a bit more commonplace for us in recent times with Canterbury, Otago, and now Southland. I guess as an observation, though, it's certainly something not that we certainly don't shy from, and. What we've certainly recognised is that these processes that we now go through and are now becoming commonplace are a means by which the entire industry, particularly dairy, is able to, if you like, tell its story about the way it is investing and protecting environmental outcomes at the same time as achieving economic and change. And for that, I think we're all better as a result of. I've outlined there just roughly and briefly in the evidence the overview of the Dairy Holdings operations, and while the mainstay of our operations are up in Canterbury, our operations in Southland have certainly grown in recent times, and we've got one conversion, as Mr. Williams has referred to, underway this season, and it almost, I suppose you'd say, counter-cyclical in this current environment, but it's certainly demonstrating I guess the importance of the Southland region for our farming operations, and the fact that they're continuing to grow and expand down here. Probably the point that I would highlight, though, is that with the conversion farm that we've got underway at the moment, that property has historically been supplying winter feed to our dairy operations, but recognising the challenges with undulating ground. And with the very runoff, the very runoff issues that that a number of the proposed rules and policies are dealing with, that was why we invested a couple of years ago in the property above Mossburn at Valley Views, and so I guess it's something that we've had quite an awareness of, but we've recognised that we need to be across the entire footprint of our farming operations, and hence also why. We make reference in our submissions to the nutrient management groups as well as one means of being able to address that and reflect that within catchments, so within the FMUs. Just turning to the Dairy Holdings operations really in Southland, I touched earlier before, is just clarifying that point with Mr. Williams around winter grazing. And I guess the key for us is that we're recognising the need for our dairy farming operations. And the smaller areas of crop that are on those dairy farming operations to continue as permitted activities, that is quite key for us, and clearly that's reflected in what is proposed within the plan. But the point is that the Valley Views property for us is really our number one area of concern, not that property would be required to obtain consent. We're operating at about 50% of that farm's effective land area is sown to winter crop as part of the ongoing cropping rotation each year, but that when you look at the areas of guidance by which consents and conditions can be granted, the three-year averaging is obviously a real key for us. Because we've only owned that property for 2 years, the three-year average is slightly would result in a reduction in the number that we would actually be able to apply for under a consent, and also outside that is really the point that's already been touched on with regards to the physiographic zones as well. So those are two quite key points, and the flexibility around recognising grazing blocks like that and being able to obtain consent is really the key for us. Moving to the wider operations, and effectively this is the rights contained within resource consents that have already been granted. Mr. Williams has already touched on that, and obviously that's quite key for us. But it's interesting for us to note that in terms of our wider farming operations, we note that the importance that's clearly being placed within this plan on the existing dairy farming operations that are already there, and clearly that will I mean, don't underestimate the impact that that will have on future dairy conversions, and that may well be a driver within the plan, but it certainly is another significant barrier and challenge to those operations. And we know with our own Fair Place, or rather the Waimea dairy conversion that we're undertaking, just the consent process that we went through there with going to a fully notified hearing and then the steps we've been through since, that is quite a significant increase in what we had previously faced in Southland in terms of undertaking those operations. So really just make that point, because it really comes to a point later on around compliance monitoring and what that is meaning for our white farming business. These are significant changes that we're talking, but we acknowledge that they're rolling out nationwide, but it is a big change for all our farming businesses that we're needing to address. Look, I won't touch any more on the stock exclusion and fencing of waterways. I think the point's been well made. We're certainly trying to be proactive in that front, but we know that there are issues. Turning to just the point on compliance monitoring, we note that that dairy farms under the under Appendix N are requiring nutrient budgets to be regularly prepared. Probably the point here that I just make is that I think it's important that we have some degree of flexibility around nutrient budgets. What we are noticing with our farming operations elsewhere is that it is becoming increasingly difficult to have nutrient budgets completed within a narrow prescriptive time period at the end of each season. And we are really struggling to get our nutrient budgets for all of our dairy farming operations completed within the required window. What is typically happening further north is that nutrient budgets are tending to be able to be updated as there's either a change on farm or as those farms become audited. So all I'd suggest here is that any flexibility that can be afforded to farms, that it's only rarely where there has been a major change on farm that a nutrient budget would need to be updated or changed, will be a bit of flexibility that will be very, very valuable on farm. For dairy holdings, we're finding that cost, just simply for what is a smaller holding for us in Southland compared to our wider operations, it's still a cost that's fast approaching somewhere between $7,500 and $10,000 per annum as we undertake annual nutrient budgets and also the farm environment plans, or in this case, farm environment management plans in Southland. That is becoming quite a significant additional piece of work that we're needing to undertake. There are good points, though, that come out of it, and that is that there are a number of actions that we can then deal with and address, but don't underestimate the impact that that has on a number of businesses. And in the case of dairy holdings, we've now employed one dedicated person. That is largely what they do now across our 59 dairy farms for this next year. They are virtually full-time working through managing those environmental management plans and the action points out of those. So that is significant, but we do acknowledge that it's something that does add to our business at the same time. In terms of the nutrient user groups, certainly that's something that that Dairy Holdings has embraced throughout Canterbury, and certainly that was driven initially around managing water rights. But the more that we are managing nutrient management groups, this is less about an irrigation issue, and it's more actually, in our view, around managing the wider dairy footprint. And so by that I mean the winter grazing and the dairy platforms and young stock as well. So it enables us, Dairy Holdings as a business, to accept the full responsibility for our total footprint. And that's what nutrient management groups have been able to deliver to us. Now, what does that mean for us over the last few years? It's meant that we've actually been more proactive with investing in on-farm and putting in mitigations, because we're able to more easily access the benefits of those investments. So in other words, when you undertake a small investment on farm, the gain that you get is a small incremental one, and because of that, your investment can be delayed. When you start to get a group of farmers, and they don't have to be commonly held operations like dairy holdings, but where you get a group of farmers operating together at a catchment level, or in dairy holdings case, as a group of, as a multi-farm business, suddenly the drive to invest and undertake those incremental investments can take on a whole new meaning. And so what we find is that in our business, we try and have that regime in place first, and then we invest, we get the credit for what we do, but it's actually meant that we invest earlier and ahead of time than rather than waiting for things to happen. So that's been a very, very key and important part for our business over the last few years. In fact, I would suggest the worst position that we were in was until these regimes have played through and we're left in a position of uncertainty. And that time, we've actually been slower to invest. So we've been reserving our investments, waiting for that the operating environment that we work within to become clearer, and then we've committed our investment. And so we've been able to capture the gain, but acknowledge that that improvements have also been required as well. And I guess the last point then is really just moving to the points that have already been made around good management practice. We acknowledge that good management practice is an ever-changing definition, and every generation will have a different view around that. I guess the key piece here is to make sure that those good management practices, whatever they may be, do receive wider industry support, and they're not practices that are effectively dreamt up with little thought. Now that's, I know that that's potentially an inflammatory comment, but all its meaning is that we do need to be very, very well considered as we work through good management practices, and we acknowledge that the science behind many of these practices, as some of those may be reflected, whether it's programs like Overseer or many others, that there's quite a delay in the uptake of those practices as well. So the need for clarity around what good management practice is can be very, very important, and it certainly helps remove our uncertainty in that front as well. So I think that's very, very key for us and has been covered as well. So, but otherwise, just back at a more general sense, we are, as a multi-farm business, we are supportive of the plan. We note that it's quite pragmatic on a number of fronts that we're not seeing reflected elsewhere. And so we certainly congratulate the both the staff and council for how it's been put through, and certainly the comments to the submissions that have been reflected in the staff report as well. So thank you.
Great, thank you, Mr. Bass. We'll just see if we have questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one. Farm Environment Management Plan under Part B. I'm just wondering what your, I'm actually reading out of the plan itself here, reviewed at least every 12 months and reviewed documents and basically present to council on request. What is your view on reviewed and who reviews it? Are you taking it that it's an internal process that's reviewed and updated, or is it by some other external party?
The position we have been faced with in Canterbury, and please forgive me for referring there, it's only the fact that we've had that regime in place now for a couple of years up there, that the party up there has typically been an independent external auditor. And so our assumption was, rightly or wrongly, that this would be moving down that similar pathway. What we are seeing further north is that now that we're actually getting into the significance and the size and scale of this work, is that there's actually becoming a bit more leeway there, and that we have seen an audit regime in conjunction with a series of grades. And what it's really saying is that where that review highlights matters of concern, then that's reviewed annually or in some cases for a lesser duration. Where the farm practices are such that it's regarded favourably and I guess you'd say more reflecting good practice, then there's a grace period for the next review, and I think up there it's up to a period of about 3 years, and that would make sense in this regard as well. Anything that can incentivise farmers to do a darn good job of these types of documents and embrace them by then giving them some further grace period at the same time. So in other words, rewarding those positive behaviours, we could only endorse.
Thank you, Mr. North.
Good morning, Mr. Glass. I'm looking at your figure one about where your farms are located. And it's really in the context of the nutrient user group or nutrient management group that you're referring to. They're quite a distance apart, and I think you acknowledge that in your own evidence that it may not actually work on those individual farms. So,
The main group here, you'll see there's quite a strong collection or close connection of farms around that area just northwest from Mandeville, up the Waimea Valley. Certainly they would be in the same group, and that's the sort of thing that we were contemplating. Winter grazing, in our case, a winter grazing block is quite some distance away, and clearly that would need to stand alone. Hence our concern around, because that property is standing out from our other operations, so we know that property will not necessarily get the benefit of a nutrient management group and being able to operate that way, so it needs to be able to have some sort of flexibility to be able to gain consent in its own right. So hence why we drew those two quite clear distinctions.
So if the provisions were brought in in that wintering property way up on its own, would it be likely that you would look to form a nutrient management group with farms in that vicinity?
Well, look, we certainly could do that. What would be more likely is that our own young stock operations within Dairy Holdings are currently all undertaken in Canterbury. If we were able to affect something like this, we may well bring those down to Southland. And that would actually be, well, certainly as the young stock related to Southland. So again, what it would do is it would actually have us undertaking our full suite of farming operations for our dairy operations in Southland and in that local area, which from an economic point of view, that's actually better for the region as well as achieving the environmental outcomes.
And the term you've been using, nutrient management group, I think it's taken from your evidence intro there that it's a broader than the nutrient user group description that has been used elsewhere in Canterbury. You would prefer the term nutrient management group rather than?
Rather than user group. Sorry, Ben, you want to clarify.
So this is the issue I've touched on orally, that in Canterbury now we've got references in various places to nutrient user groups, nutrient management groups, farm enterprises. There is some nitty-gritty differences between them. They're different in different areas in Canterbury, but simple proposition is they're all referring to the same thing. We're not too worried about what the actual label is. Farm enterprise inherently is perhaps just looking at the words themselves, it's a single farming operation with other bits of land elsewhere. Nutrient management group I quite like because it's obviously ultimately focused on managing nutrients and land use and management sensible, and it goes a little bit broader than a single owner operation or just, but the label in and of itself is obviously not determined at the end of the day. So.
Yes, it gets confusing if you introduce the vernacular.
Absolutely.
I think the key point there is that any mechanism that can enable multiple farms to work more closely together can achieve some pretty desirable outcomes, really, irrespective of whether they're commonly owned or not.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Mark? No, I had a bit of a go before. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just two comments really rather than questions. Firstly, in terms of the nutrient user group, nutrient management group concept, I think we understand the merits of that. The issue we'll need to consider as a panel is that, unlike Canterbury, this plan doesn't get into allocating property level nutrient discharge limits. That's to be done, if at all, in this region through the FMU process. So an issue we'll need, and I don't need a response, it's really just a comment, the issue we'll need to consider as a panel, therefore, is how far is it appropriate for us to go down that track at this stage? But that's something we'll think about as we go through the hearing process. The other thing was, Mr. Glass, just a question for you in terms of the nutrient budgets. You asked us to consider flexibility on that. This plan in its Appendix N, which sets out the recipe for farm environment management plans, under Part B, Section 4, it mimics almost word for word the Canterbury provisions, whereby you do the nutrient budget every 3 years unless there's a material change, in which you do it that year and then you do it 3 years thereafter. So I just wanted to check, are you happy with that approach?
I'm certainly happy with that approach. The devil is in the detail, because in a way, how do you demonstrate a material change? And sometimes that means you've got to do one to show that you haven't changed. So it's really just the flexibility around that. It's stepping back from the devil in the detail, really,
yeah,
and saying that's really key.
All right, thank you. Next witness, please.